Lizzie and I are live as we have been for weeks and weeks now, as usual. And I think I say this every week, but it's true. I'm really thrilled that we do this. This has become, whatever it is for anybody else who's watching, this has become a really important and meaningful Sunday morning commitment and practice. So it's wonderful to be here. So I'm speaking, I'm back upstairs in my office in my house, which I've been out of for a little while because I've not wanted to disturb anybody who's sleeping in my house this morning. I've decided I'm sitting up here, and I'm speaking to you slightly debilitated by a very sore and stiff back. So I pulled something in my back a couple of days ago, so I might have to wriggle around to keep myself mobile whilst we're talking. And I'm really pleased to be bringing something that I wrote this week. So I'm going to pause and say good morning to Lizzie. See what you have to say.
I am, as always, just like shocked and surprised at how cool it is that we do this. And so far that hasn't really gone away, where I just feel a deep appreciation of the conversations that unfold and what gets born because we have the conversation together, Justin. You know, I'm here with Nina and Sue from Third Space, and we're doing a supervision program. And last night they were saying, you know, how do you prepare and what do you do to be able to say like coherent things? And I said, well, I just let the source in, but I don't plan what I'm going to say or something. It just, because we're in relationship, the source and what it points to then gets enriched by our conversation because we're together. And so that phenomenon is really interesting to me, that something gets born in me because we're together. And I'm really grateful for that, the quality of that, getting, having us both speak into things that aren't scripted or prepared, but are born of our relationship, our togetherness. And that's quite something. So I'm really grateful.
Lizzie, one of the one of the writers and thinkers that I love the most, maybe I'll see if I can find a way of bringing him into this work that we're doing, although he tends to write in a very long way, so it's hard to find short pieces. This man called Raymond Tallis, is a now retired neurologist, and he also worked with elderly people in his medical career. And he says this amazing thing, which I think is really connected with what you're saying, which is, he has a really big critique of this whole move in our culture to study people, to study neuroscience as if neuroscience will tell us everything that there is about people. And he has this beautiful turn of phrase. He says that when you put somebody into a scanner and you peer into the intracranial darkness, you see lots, but what you don't see is that the being of being human arises between us. You can't find it in a person.
Yeah.
You can find lots about people inside a person, but that the whole history of being human has been one of being in relationship with one another, and it's how we became human in the first place. This is argument. It's an entirely relational phenomenon. And so it's no surprise to me, I mean, it's only one way of talking about this beautiful and very important sense that you're talking about, which is that, for example, when we're doing this, it seems to me like I think you're saying, what there is to say comes from this mysterious in between. When it comes from you and it comes from me, but it also comes from, and this is where the name Third Space, I increasingly think, comes from. It comes from this third something that's between us and around us and between everybody, that is very, very, very ancient and very, very deep and wide. That we're always coming from, and it's a relationship. And I think that's why doing this is so different. I know this is the conversation we were just beginning to have before we came online. It's so different from speaking on your own, on one's own. know, either of us could sit and speak to a camera, but it wouldn't be this.
Mm-hmm.
It would be radically different from this, because it's the something between us that's giving birth to all of it.
Yeah.
Mm. So I love that too.
So Justin, shall we begin by me reading what you've written about hope?
Yeah.
And then are you going to read it after me?
I'll read it too, yeah, yeah. That'd be
great. Okay, so this is by Justin Wise. A lovely piece of writing. There are a million ways to be, but we hold on tightly to the way of being that is most familiar to us, the one each of us thinks is who we are. And so when we're in trouble or stressed or feeling held back by the world or by ourselves, when we're longing, wishing, wanting, despairing, we tend to do more of what we already know to do, what we always do, even when it hurts us, even when by doing this we keep the world the same as it has been for so long. We choose familiarity over our growth because familiarity seems to save us from risk. At least we know the world when it's this size, this shape. At least we won't be surprised. And because of this, just when our habit is to rush to do something, it's often just the right time to wait. When we're certain we have to be certain, the right time to be curious. When we're most familiar with holding back, it can be the time to act. When we're sure we have to be strong, the right time to be vulnerable. When we're most ready to judge, can be time to suspend judgment. When we're most harsh on ourselves, it's the time, instead, to be exquisitely kind. And when we're most despairing, it's often just the right time to hope.
So I'll read it too. There are a million ways to be, but we hold on tightly to the way of being that's most familiar to us, the one each of us thinks is who we are. And so when we're in trouble or stressed or feeling held back by the world or by ourselves, when we're longing, wishing, wanting, despairing, we tend to do more of what we already know to do, what we always do, even when it hurts us, even when by doing this, we keep the world the same as it has been for so long. We choose familiarity over our own growth because familiarity seems to save us from risk. At least we know the world when it's this size, this shape. At least we won't be surprised. And because of this, just when our habit is to rush to do something, it's often just the right time to wait. When we're certain we have to be certain, the right time to be curious. When we're most familiar with holding back, it can be the time to act. When we're sure we have to be strong, the right time to be vulnerable. When we're most ready to judge, can be time to suspend judgment. When we're most harsh on ourselves, it's the time instead to be exquisitely kind. And when we're most despairing, it's often just the right time to hope.
So Justin, the particular way that this piece of your writing moves me is, I mean, there's lots of things that it sparks, but the one that feels biggest to me right now is this big experiment of finding a way to not do the thing we've always done. How do you do that? And to feel it's possible to, as you say, do nothing when my pattern is to do, when I feel stressed or triggered or something. And this sense that the way that we're participating is keeping the thing going that we're really upset about. And that there's part of it that's us. that has the circumstance feel the way that the circumstance does. That it's not the thing itself attacking us or something. The situation's not attacking us, but it's the way that we're in interpretation about it. It has such a huge impact on our experience. And so it feels like the invitation here is working with our interpretation, working with the way that we're relating to something. We might make some shifts in ourselves. So to take up a different practice in the stress, in the things being difficult when we're in trouble, and see if we can be in that opening in a way where we can take up something even minorly different to see how, see if it turns out differently this time, because you can be sure that your practice ground will come back again and again and again. You know, like patterns are relentlessly returning into our lives. And to cultivate the kind of practice of, so if, when this happens one more time, maybe just this time, I'll have a go at something different. I'll cultivate the kind of consciousness that can go, here's this thing again. This is what I normally do. So kind of step one, observing what actually happens in the first place. And then seeing if we can not do the thing that we've normally done. That's the kind of curious and interesting part to me that's really intriguing. It has me think, a different world might arise if I didn't rise to the same thing every time in the same way. And of course, you know, like usually I think of my relationship with Matthew, with my husband. It's like, have I got the capacity to not say the same thing as I always say when he says that thing? You know, even like simple things like that, or to not be the same kind of person I am when we're trying to get out the door to go somewhere. Like, could I just watch myself? And for one, we go out the door all the time, basically. So it's, you know, to find a way that it's not too much is at stake, that I could be slightly different to see if the world might shift if I didn't do the same old that Lizzie always does.
Mm. Such a kind way of saying it. Because I got really struck as we were reading this, the one way of looking at it, and I think this is a really easy way of taking this up. Certainly I can take this up in my own life, is as a sort of punitive self-correction.
Mm.
And the trap here is exactly as you're saying. I think you really captured it powerfully. There's a way in which we take up an interpretation of the world and of ourselves, and we keep it going by acting in that way. And then I know that when I get into a sort of, well, there's lots of suffering and difficulty in this. Oh, and brackets, there might be lots of beauty in it too. But when I'm seeing the suffering and difficulty in it, now I have to correct myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's so much truth in what you're saying, which is that those moments, it's really touched to hear you say, for example, like any of us with somebody we love, a partner or a child or a friend or a parent, and we find ourselves in the same pattern again and again. There's so much truth in the new world that can come when we find ourselves not yelling at that moment, or getting into action at that moment, or being quiet in that moment, which would be the opposite thing to the thing we ordinarily do. And a whole new world can begin to open there. And I certainly notice this strongly in myself, the sense that I have to do this because there's something wrong with me. I have to correct myself. I'm faulty. And so if I learn to be quiet when I would ordinarily speak, or for me often speak up when I would ordinarily be quiet, this is simultaneously a way of sort of correcting it. It's a way of abandoning myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I could really feel when you were talking about it, that there's that is itself it's an impossible trap. It's one of these, someone used this phrase in a conversation I was in this week, a Gordian knot. And I think a Gordian knot is one, it doesn't matter which way you pull on it, it gets tighter, you know, whichever way you go.
Yeah.
So there's such kindness and freedom in the way that you're saying it, which is we get into a familiar way of engaging with the world. That's right. It's particular to us. It's actually very beautiful. And it's usually only a very tiny part of the fullness of us. And so to the extent, for example, I think I wrote this some time ago, and the last line was the one that was most important to me, was I wrote it in a time of feeling very deep despair about very much. And I could feel how the impetus of, well, despairing is familiar, and it's my response here, kept itself going. That in the middle of that, to say, well, I wonder what would happen if I was hopeful here, if I took a different stand on it. That's not as self-correct, not as self-punishment, but as, oh, look at this. I can occupy, there's more of me than I knew here. I can hope where I would ordinarily despair, and something else will come of it. And maybe there's a kind of truth in it that I didn't even see yet. So this is the way you're talking about it is inviting me into this, is knowing ourselves to be way richer, more complex than we had done and so far, and seeing what happens if we step into that richness and complexity and what comes from it. So it's quite the opposite of self-abandonment, actually. It's more like any of the words that I want to pick here sound, they all have this problem, Lizzie, that they sound like a kind of, I've got to get better, which is not what if I said self-expansion or self, it's more like finding out, how about saying it this way, finding out that there's fullness here that we had not even yet appreciated, and allowing ourselves to inhabit it. That's the way I want to come at this.
Absolutely. And I think this, for me anyway, this notion of experimentation, an openness to experimentation, i.e. when I'm in the depths of my despair and I have this pattern of thinking that, well, if I'm in despair, it's just going to be more despair and then more despair and then more despair. And at some point we get sick of that. You know, we get sick of our, like, our self-talk, you know, the narrative that we have about something. And at some point we go, right, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to have the same argument again with my husband, or I don't want to have the same pattern of spiraling into something that I already have, that I've had for years. And so I feel like it's really helpful to, as you're saying, like, see what else is here. Because in reality, there's absolutely nothing wrong, as you say, with being in despair. But we're in pain. You know, we're suffering. We're trying to find some more freedom in our human experience than the repetitive, familiar, even though that's our default and that's where we go to for safety. There's this thing in all of us of, like, what else is there? You know, and I think we often get inspired by different people and different things as well. Like, I see someone and I think, wow, they seem to be able to, like, get through the day in a different way than me. Like, what's that about? And actually, we had this interesting conversation yesterday in the group we were in, and somebody said that comparison is the thief of joy. And so, as you're saying, there's such a fine line between all of these things, that they're so quick to go to the opposite of the thing we intend. So I think you and I are pretty adamant that, like, self-improvement and self-correction is not the kind of work we're up to in the world, of making people better or fixing things. And there's also this openness to what else there might be than the current way that this is turning out, and seeing what our part in that is, and our power, our capacity to shift the way that we're participating that might have things turn out differently. And remembering and keeping real about our relationship to that when it comes out, when it becomes self-criticism, it's likely not to work anyway. Like, I self-criticism doesn't open anything up. It just makes us feel really bad. Like, there's something deficiently and horribly wrong with us, which we've already got going on anyway, so we don't need to load anything else onto that. But this this kind of crack in the system that might let us have an opening that goes, well, I'm going to hold steady here and see if I can find another entry point into something new, something when we're getting out the door and everyone's getting their shoes on or whatever. And this is what I love. Like, I love the ordinariness of the moments that get given to us in our lives as our practice ground. You know, this is not some kind of, intense school of enlightenment or something where earth-shattering bolts of lightning come down and make us something different. It feels like the ordinary moments of washing up and being in our lives and making a cup of tea and walking somewhere and getting on a train. They're all ways that we can experiment with this invitation that you're making of seeing what our habit is and finding a way of questioning ourselves and wondering what it would be like to walk a little bit slower to the train station and what kind of world comes to me as I'm slower or faster. But looking firstly at what we're up to, seeing that with plain eyes and neutrality, if you like, of being an observer, and then engaging in these experiments.
I think the the act of experimenting, I love this way you're talking about it, is it in the midst of ordinary life is so important, because our habits are so convincing to us. At least this is what I found.
Yeah.
So despair, for example, or feeling, for me, it's the other one I've been working with, feeling left out or feeling judged by someone else, and all the habits that come from that. So if I feel left out, for example, and then I have particular ways that I know how to respond, often for me it's withdrawing, and that keeps the whole, just seems so obvious, it's all true, and my response to it is part of the obviousness of it. And there's no real way of, I've tried this often and it hasn't helped me very much, of kind of analyzing it. If I think it through enough, and I think there's something to be said of thinking it through, but usually where some new life gets breathed in is where I find it in me with great kindness, and I think often with a sort of sense of playfulness, to go, okay, I'll just experiment with a different kind of response, like a different kind of inner response or a different kind of outer response in relationship or both to this situation, and we'll see what happens. And what's so beautiful about it is usually I'm finding out more and more that the thing, the interpretation of the world that I'd taken to be true is just the tiniest part of something. There's so much more life there. But it takes a certain kind of, I think I said this word discipline a moment ago, a certain kind of discipline to remember to go, I don't have to respond this way. In fact, maybe even the whole ground that I'm standing on is not what I thought it was. You know, I'm so sure the world is like this. Maybe it's not like that, really.
Mm.
And we find out by... One way we find out is by acting into it. And it's so different from an idea that somehow we'll get, I don't know, enlightenment from the sky or something. You know, one day I'll just wake up and I'll see the whole world differently.
Mm.
Actually, I think in my experience, more and more, whatever's going to happen comes from inhabiting the world a little bit differently. And like I said earlier, not for the sake of, oh, how I've been is so terrible, but more like there's so much more space than I knew here.
Yeah, it's making me think of a couple of things in my kind of process, if you like, Justin. One from yesterday when we did this thing that was, we had to sit, you know, opposite one another, and then just me and one other person, and then the whole group had to tell me what it was like to be witness to me being in the position that I was in the constellation that we were doing an exercise on. And I could feel that most of me wanted to run out of the room. Most of me wanted to just turn everything into something positive that they were saying And they were being really kind. But it was this realization that really people telling me what they think of me when I'm in something very precious to me is excruciating. And so I did this experiment with myself of, instead of doing all the things that I would normally do, which would be kind of negating anything positive and then trying to take anything negative and turn it into positive anyway, which is strange, but it's kind of, I noticed that that's what I do. I really tried to stay present and let my body get used to what was happening and work with my breath to be present to what was happening, rather than allowing myself to kind of run roughshod over my experience with all of my thinking and analysis of what people were saying. And it was so interesting, because I in the end found myself wanting to have more of that experience so that I could become different because of it, that I could become something more, as you're saying, something where I could have another response in my repertoire that would actually allow what was happening in, rather than going boo, 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 like pushing it away just to protect myself. So it got me really interested in how I became hungry for something that I didn't want. And you know, there's another 5 days of this coming, so I might change my mind about wanting more. But it's a really, it was a really interesting thing to notice how fast my heart was beating and how frightened I felt. And then to consciously work with my fear and my terror of the world turning back on me and saying intensely, times six, what they thought of me. And the other thing that springs to mind is this thing I have of being kind of self-righteous about what has and hasn't been done and who should have done it. And I get like, well, that's your job and that's your job, and why haven't you done this? And recently I've been experimenting with seeing how, when I'm triggered in that particular way, in a kind of sacrificial way of like, well, I've done this, so why haven't you done that kind of dynamic in relationship, I've been seeing if I can do a different thing to my habit, which is, instead of blaming somebody, instead of judging somebody, seeing if I can catch myself somewhere in that process and tell them how much I appreciate them. And it shifts so much for me to do that. Like, a different thing happens down the road than would normally happen, which is basically withdrawal, some kind of processing, and then somewhere along the line, some forgiveness or something come back together again, which is great, which is fine. But then the experiment was, well, what if in the midst of this, in the midst of my triggering and actually probably being quite impatient and judgmental, what if I could muster something in me to say, genuinely reorienting myself and coming up with my sense of appreciation for this person and saying it. And it turned out completely differently the last time I did that, which I think was on the weekend. And it didn't mean that I didn't get to say that I was upset. It just was different. It didn't last for as long, and I didn't hold on so tightly to my opinion, and I didn't die or feel diminished, you know, or less than. It felt that there was more freedom.
Mm. You know, both examples that you gave in being on this program you're on, and the experience you had in the group, and in this other example of turning towards someone in appreciation right in the midst of your strongest judgment, there's at least as I'm listening to you, Lizzie, there's a sense that what you're doing is turning towards a kind of aliveness and even a kind of love. You know, you said about the experience in the group, you really didn't want it, but actually you found, when you, the result of your experiment was you turned into it and you said, I would so love more of this. And this is the thought I'm having as we're sort of heading towards the end of our time, is that this has a lot to do with love. It has an awful lot to do with finding out what we haven't yet, what we didn't yet know we could love, because we were so busy being afraid or being certain. And the image that's in my mind is, I want to find this for another week, but I came across a reading of a poem by Rainer Maria Rilke that I don't have in my mind at the moment, but it's about a swan.
Mm.
And the thing that he points out in this poem about the swan is that when a swan is walking on land, if you watch a swan walking on land, it's kind of ridiculous. Because they waddle from, that's right, but also they take one step, and then they're with the moment the swan lifts up its leg, it's top heavy, and so it kind of collapses. And the swan can do perfectly fine on land. But when it gets into the water, when it finds the water into which to swim, it's totally different.
Yeah.
And that's what I heard in what you were saying. And I also know that's true of me. So, for example, my attachment to despair, which is really common for me, and I think comes down long family line in all kinds of ways, isn't really the water in which to swim. It's like waddling about on land and being certain that that's my place. And then there are these moments where if I allow myself, I find myself in the water, and it takes quite, like in your examples, quite a lot of, oh, I don't have to be on the land. I could actually let myself fall into that which I love, that I'm a bit afraid of.
Mm.
And it can only come from these, seems to me it mostly comes from the act of experimenting with how I am and what I do in the midst of things, and also my preparedness to be around people I love and places I love and work that I love and all of those kind of things. Mm. Those are sort of the two roots to it. That's you finding yourself in the water was how both of these examples sounded to me.
Mm. Mm. That's so beautiful, Justin, this one thing I'm sent off in to a kind of deeper imagining of like feeling more invited into whatever the water might be in any moment, and the kind of freedom that feels like to be the swan in the water rather than the swan waddling on the land, making the mistake of thinking it's place. And actually that has me feel this kind of hope. The essential, not attached to the outside of things and how things might turn out, but an internal wide-eyed hope into all my patterns and all my stuff and all the different kinds of suffering and stuff that I perpetuate and ways that I hurt people and diminish myself and the rest of it. It's really beautiful.
I think we need to close for this morning.
Yes.
I'm so glad for this conversation. Thank you so much.
Yeah, me too, Justin. Thank you.
And we'll see everyone next week, all being well.
Mm.
The world keeps turning the way it is. We'll be back next week. I want to say thank you for everyone for being part of this with us. And we'll look forward to speaking with you all in the Facebook group, and we'll see you soon.
Hey, everybody.
Bye.